Last week on License to Parent, we began a conversation with two teenage girls who are students here at Shepherd's Hill Academy. They were once troubled teens, but have been transformed and see things from a brand new perspective. The conversation was so compelling that we continued rolling tape. You see, we can learn a lot from teens about the needs, struggles, concerns, and solutions that are pertinent to raising teens. And there's a lot more to learn in part two of our conversation, what today's teenagers wish today's parents knew about today's teenagers. Today on License to Parent. Well, Trace, last time around, we were talking with Holly and Melissa, two students here at Shepherd's Hill Academy. And as is typical when we have guests in the studio, we got way more questions than we have time. Yep. So we have invited them back for part two of the program that we loosely called What Today's Teenagers Wish Today's Parents Knew About Today's Teenagers.
Part two in a series of 12.
But we talked last time about discipline. That's one of the things that we covered. And Melissa, you had something very insightful to say, that you and your brother, for some reason, were not built exactly the same way in terms of what discipline worked with you. Can you tell us again what some of the differences? I think you said your brother got very upset when he was scolded, but that wasn't the case with you?
Yes, sir. My brother, he cares a lot about what like my parents think and right and wrong.
He's
a
pleaser.
Yes.
Okay.
And so whenever my parents, you know, got on to him about something, he would be very upset and he most likely wouldn't do it again. But for me, it was more of they can tell me 500 times and I still probably won't get it if I don't want to get it. And so what would happen was my parents would be, they were afraid to discipline me or call me out on something because I would react pretty terribly. And so then it became everything I was doing was, like, they would let it slip and they'd let it slide, and I wouldn't get in trouble for the same things my brother would, and it just led to more things of me getting away with.
So peacekeeping really doesn't pay off. And
no.
We shared in this broadcast quite often that kids come out of the womb clay. Your brother was soft, malleable clay. You could shape it, mold it. You were more hardened clay. You can be shaped, but it's going to take more of a hammer and chisel approach to that harder clay than, you know, just being able to mold with, you know, easily with your hands. But what I want to ask you, ladies, in general, you know, is God has a lot to say about the importance of discipline. What role has discipline or the lack of discipline played in forming the general character of young people today?
I think a lot of times discipline is either there's a lot of discipline or there isn't any discipline at all in families. Mm-hmm. And you can tell which is which. A lot of the time, it neither way really works, especially since people aren't always made the same way.
And so it goes back to tailoring to the needs of the child. So I have people all the time tell me, you know, I raised my kids all the same, but they turned out different. I said, they turned out different because you raised them all the same. You know, you have to tailor your parenting approach to the DNA of the child.
Yes, sir. And that it caused a lot of work for my parents because they tried to do, a lot of times they tried to do the same discipline for all of us. But
And Holly, you're from a large family, right?
Yes, sir. There are 11 kids.
11 kids. Okay. And you were right in the middle, I believe you said last time.
Number five. So I'm right above, but I still feel like the middle.
One of the middle cluster.
Yes, sir.
Would you say there's a lack of discipline in general from parents on behalf of kids your age? How are parents doing in that respect?
I feel like, at least where I live, discipline is, there's not very much. The worst that will happen is you're grounded from your phone for the weekend, and you can still go out and do whatever. And it forms a lot of like bad relationships between the kids and the parents. Mm-hmm. And so it definitely shows the lack of discipline.
So what heads up can you give parents about discipline after coming from an environment that maybe wasn't so structured, disciplined? And then the last several months living in a structure that was structured and disciplined, how do you feel about yourself as a human being when there are people who will put up guardrails for you? Is that a bad thing, a good thing? What can you tell parents about that?
I feel like discipline, for me at least, is a huge thing because I like structure. And I feel like the biggest thing is don't be afraid to hurt your child's feelings for a few minutes or a few days, because it will be worth it in the end. And it probably won't, I mean, it'll make them dislike you for a little bit, but it's very, very important.
Very beneficial. It's an investment, I would say. I hope parents are hearing this. This is coming from the mouth of a 16-year-old.
I'm curious about something that we talked about last time, and Melissa, I think you may have been the one talking about this, that you got to the point where you didn't want to spend time really at home, and so you would try to spend more and more time at other people's homes rather than your own. And Holly, that may have been your experience as well. I don't know. I could imagine with 11 kids in the family, you might want to spend time anywhere but at home unless you live in a mansion somewhere. I don't know. Space would be somewhat tight. But when you were spending time away from home in other families' homes, how did that experience differ from what you were finding in your own house? What drew you to the other homes?
Probably the lack of discipline and the lack of boundaries. At my other friends' houses, you were just free to do whatever you wanted, and it didn't really matter where you were, who you were with, as long as you were alive and texting your parents saying that you were okay. But it definitely made me kind of wish that my parents were more like other people's parents.
But see, what you just said there is, it sounds a bit contradictory, but I think that's evidence of the fact that there's a spirit-flesh component to who we are, because it was your flesh that really liked no boundaries, but deep inside,
you were saying you needed structure.
Right. And that's the spiritual part of you, which we all have and we all need and we deep down all want. But again, left to ourselves, when we are basically enabled to follow the carnal desires, whatever that is, sex, drugs, rock and roll, food, whatever, then we want more of it. And more and more and more never satisfies us until we get that spirit and flesh part of who we are aligned. And that really is the crux of what parenting is all about.
Yeah.
Ladies, many parents believe that their kids really don't want to spend time with them. Can you comment on that?
For me, at least, I kind of wanted to spend time with my parents, but it was like it didn't come natural to me because it wasn't always that important in my life. And so, or it wasn't as enforced. And so once we started to spend more family time together and actually have fun together and do like fun activities, then I actually did want to be with my family.
What were some of the things that you all started doing that you hadn't been doing?
Well, I mean, it sounds simple, but the biggest thing was just family dinner. And we have these little conversation card things. And we just ask those questions and they would start like great conversations.
Sure.
And just like a small thing like that and just having a good, fun conversation
with
your
family. Good old-fashioned dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. How about it, Holly?
For me, it was kind of funny. It was always want what I can't have. I actually got to spend a lot of time with my mom, and I learned to just like, I don't want to spend as much time with her anymore. But I didn't spend as much time with my dad, and I was always like, wait, I want to hang out with dad now. So it was always what I couldn't have.
Mm-hmm. But I think what parents want to hear, and I think you guys said it, is that kids really do want to spend time with their parents. And that's really the message I wanted to get across.
And I think also to echo that, Melissa, I believe you said this, that early on, because of the fact that your parents perhaps didn't spend as much time with you, you began pushing back and not wanting to spend time with them as well. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So again, that goes back to parents, we need to take the lead.
That's right.
And
good point.
We invest the time, and hopefully that will yield the benefits that both Melissa and Holly have seen in their lives.
Good point. Well, you guys are familiar with the term moral relativism and postmodernism. Since you've been here, I'm sure you probably understand that, right?
Yes, sir.
For those of us who are in the dark, give us a one or two sentence definition of what you're talking about.
Well,
Tracy.
Relativism, basically, there is no
absolute
truth,
right or wrong.
Right. Everything's kind of relative.
Situational ethics would be another way
pretty
of describing
much, it. Yeah. And, postmodernism is basically, my truth is as good as your truth. Again, there are no absolutes. Do you ladies think that relativism and postmodernism has negatively affected your generation?
Yes, sir. More than we can even understand.
Mm. And how so?
Well, we're constantly looking to ourselves more and a lot more self-centered than even the past generation, because we're saying, oh, well, I can do this, but you can't. And it's a lot of double standards and a lot of confusion and chaos.
What would happen if more parents challenged the logical conclusions of their kids' postmodern worldviews?
I feel like at least myself and some of my friends that I knew of, we'd actually accept the truth more because I was never, I never heard postmodern postmodernism or relativism or anything. So just, and I like to know answers. So hearing that, okay, this is, this doesn't make sense, mm-hmm. but I think it does. It would, at least for me and some of the people I know, we'd be able to be put the pieces together and say, okay, well, this isn't true. So what is?
Trace, I know as a kid, I grew up in church, but it was not until I was in college that I first met someone who actually lived life as if what the Bible says mattered.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, it wasn't just on Sunday I go to church and I do these things on Sunday and then I live my life the way I want to the rest of the week. This friend of mine lived life for Christ 7 days a week. That was the first person I'd ever seen do that after growing up in church. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think if we as parents can learn from what's being said here and communicate that not only in what we say, but also in how we live,
yeah.
so that our kids are seeing that in the decisions we make, that would be helpful. What do you ladies think most people in your generation use to determine right from wrong? What's the basis for right and wrong among your friends?
There isn't really much of a basis. It's kind of like whatever we feel like doing, whatever...
which is postmodern thought.
Exactly. Whatever just makes us as a person happy is what is... Right.
Yeah. And if more parents could articulate through apologetics and, you know, just an understanding of worldview in general, these truths, these logical truths mm-hmm. and why scripture backs up these logical truths, I think it would make more sense to their kids and their kids would be more apt to submit to all that because it's reality.
Let me walk down this path just a little bit, though. If it feels right to you, then it's right, you're saying. But suppose a group's together. Do you think everybody in this group of 5 or 10 kids believes that taking something from somebody else is wrong?
Probably the concept of it, they would think, oh, yeah, stealing is bad. But like in the situation, if it's like stealing a small thing, it's fine. Like if it's just stealing like
or
a bracelet or a candy bar.
Or if you're stealing from a big store.
Back to relativism again.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so what brings about this general thought that stealing is probably wrong depending? Where do you think they get that idea?
Probably, I mean, they get the thought that it's bad because it's against the law, but they get the thought that it's okay because, you know, I've never gotten caught for it. So, I mean, it should be fine. Yeah.
It should make them feel better when they acquire somebody else's stuff.
What, what about cheating in school? Is that prevalent among the people you know? Is it widely, is it expected?
In my group, at least, I'm homeschooled, but we go to a homeschool group.
Now, this is really bad if you and your fellow students are cheating.
Well, but there's a group of homeschoolers that we get together, but it's almost expected to cheat. And if you're not doing well, just get your mom to say, hey, she couldn't do the homework today or whatever. It's just like expected. No one was really expected to do work at all.
This is like in a homeschool co-op you're talking about. If you don't have your work ready to turn in to that group, then have your parents bail you out is what
yes,
you're
sir.
Saying. Wow. Melissa, did you run across any that you don't have to implicate yourself? I don't know if you ever cheated or not, but I mean, is cheating something that you were aware of, or is that something that's accepted by your friends?
At my old school, we took a lot of online classes. And so what, just like she said, it was almost expected to, on a quiz, you could look up the answers online and just copy and paste them. And it was just normal. I mean, almost everybody was aware of it, but since it was so easy to do, it didn't seem like it was that bad.
Hmm. Well, we've mentioned this on the broadcast in the past. Statistics show that 80% of young people are cheating to get their grades, and they only feel bad about it if they get caught. That's kind of the mentality, but that goes right along with postmodern relativistic thought because it's they're compartmentalizing their whole reality, and it's just not congruent with reality.
I should confess that we looked up that 80% statistic online. We didn't do our own study, but anyway.
Let me ask you ladies something here. Why are so many young people today not accepting or abandoning a biblical worldview, which starts with the premise that God is?
I think a lot of it is, at least for my friends and myself, that it was forced upon us, and so we bucked and reared as much as we could away from it, and so now we just... A lot of us just don't believe it, and we think, oh, well, since God or whatever, like God is, I don't think so, because I've seen so much otherwise in this culture. And well, this person says, well, he isn't, or you can do whatever you want and you can still go to heaven because you can be a good person or whatever. But it just isn't enforced. And if it is enforced, it seems like it's done very strictly. And so you rebel against it.
What today's teenagers wish today's parents knew about today's teenagers. That's what we're talking about today on License to Parent. We have to pause briefly, but we will be back. Our conversation with Holly and Melissa continues right after this. It's difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're face to face with a teenager who argues with you at every turn. Maybe you and your teen can't talk to one another about anything without it getting complicated. For nearly two decades, Shepherd's Hill Academy has been bringing healing to teens and families from around the world. Up until now, that help has come through its residential treatment facility in North Georgia. But now, your family can benefit from that experience at home through Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching, designed to help you discern God's will for your family, build good communication skills, deal with defiant children, and more. Our family coaching team will work with you by phone, in your home, at work, even while you're on the road, to help your family develop a game plan to succeed. Sign up for Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching today by visiting LicensedToParent.org. Live the family life your family was designed for. Click on the family coaching banner at LicensedToParent.org. Teen rebellion, depression, addiction, rage, cutting, and suicide are destroying our families today. But there is a way out. Shepherd's Hill Academy offers a 12-month, Christ-centered, nonprofit residential program where kids are being transformed with a biblical worldview and often medication-free. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias is just one of many Christian leaders who understands what's happening at Shepherd's Hill Academy.
It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and License to Parent to rescue those who have been seduced along the way. I cannot gainsay how important this is, and to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
Get the help you need at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Go to helpmytroubledteen.org. helpmytroubledteen.org. Welcome back to Licensed to Parent, coming to you from Shepherd's Hill Academy, just north of Atlanta, Georgia, a one-year residential program working with teens in crisis. And we have some of the great residual fallout from this program here in the studio with us, for lack of a better term. Holly and Melissa are two students here at Shepherd's Hill. They, I think, are excellent examples of what this program can do to help reshape young people's minds and set them on a course for great success in life. And we're glad to have both of you with us today. One of the things that my wife and I did, and you're probably going to show me all the fallacies of our ways here in just a moment, but when our kids were young, we decided we wanted to homeschool them. And we've got five children, and we did homeschool them at least, you know, up to a point. But part of the concern was what they would be taught in a, quote, regular school. We wanted to have a little more control over that. And also knowing that kids mature and, you know, excel in one area over another a little bit differently, we thought we could better manage the educational process. But I think to some degree we were concerned about the evil influences of the greater outside world. Now, I know, let's see, Holly, I believe you said you were homeschooled, right? Were you homeschooled,
yes,
Melissa?
No,
you were
sir.
Not. Okay. Well, Holly, let me get you to address that first. What's wrong with my picture that my kids are going to be completely isolated from, not that I thought they would be completely, but what do homeschool families need to wake up to here?
They need to wake up to the fact that it isn't as sugar-coated and like running through dandelions and flowers as it seems like.
Oh, darn.
because I know that my parents thought, oh, you're home. They're going to be homeschooled. All of us are homeschooled, and I'm actually the first one to go to a school, which is here. And it didn't really make a difference to me, because I still talked to the same people that I would have if I had gone to a public school, and people actually started asking me which public school I went to, because I just seemed like one of those other public schoolers. Mm-hmm. And so it got to the point where I was embarrassed to be called a homeschooler because of the stigma that comes with it. Christian overalls, like, you know, that really sheltered idea. So because of that, I started like, okay, now I have to act more like a public school. I have to seem more like a public schooler. And my parents didn't realize that until a little before I came.
And what could parents do differently to maybe keep from having you acquire an appetite for some of the crazy stuff that goes on in public schools?
Honestly, not necessarily doing everything in a Christian
context.
Lessons. Yes, because growing up, every lesson I learned was based on a Christian thing, and I kind of got tired of it. And I was like, well, I wonder what everyone else is learning, because I don't even know what they're talking about when they talk about their classes.
If it didn't have, I think the mistake parents make is if it doesn't have a cross on it or an igthus on it, you know, a little fish sign, then they feel like it's not worth anything. And so what we tell our kids here is, let's not separate the sacred from the secular. Let's find the sacred in the secular. And when you can't, take the sacred to the secular. And I think that needs to be the philosophy of more Christian parents, because I have to agree, if you're living in this small pond and there's this big sea out there, you know, naturally you're going to want to see what's in the sea. But if there's a bunch of sharks, you know, wanting to eat you up, maybe you ought to stay in the pond a little more often. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's true that all of creation was created by God.
Exactly.
This is God's world and everything
in it. He so loved the world.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the things I was reminded of was the joke about the little boy in Sunday school class, and the teacher is describing this little animal that climbs trees and collects nuts and has a bushy tail, and says, you know, what animal am I talking about? The little boy raises his hand and said, I'm not sure, but it must be Jesus. That's how we do it. And, you know, it's everything. The answer is always Jesus, as opposed to remembering that, well, you know, the rest of the world is part of God's.
Exactly right. No, that's exactly right. If I were to tell you that most Christian parents are clueless about what their Christian kids are up to, and that many secular or non-Christian parents really don't care what their kids are up to, where would I be going wrong here, kids?
That almost every kid has a rough patch in their life, whether they were brought up Christian or not. And that just because they are Christian doesn't mean that they're going, or just because their family is Christian doesn't mean that they're not going to do anything bad. And just not assuming that your child is okay all the time, and really communicating that, and really asking your child and being invested in their life, whether you think they're okay or not.
Holly, do you think that a lot of parents are clueless about what their Christian kids are up to?
Yes, sir. And either that or they turn a blind eye and kind of hope that if they ignore it, it'll go away.
We are about out of time, Trace. I wanted to jump into something, if I can, here, and that is, I'd love some specific insight from the two of you about the use of mobile digital devices, whether we're talking about iPods or tablets, or whether we're talking about, you know, cell phones and even more than that, smartphones. I believe, Holly, you said that you never had your own phone, so perhaps this is something that you can see as a more unbiased outsider, because you weren't tainted as much by these devices.
I feel like it, and to an extent, it is very beneficial, but
having those devices,
is, okay. But the same way, everything in moderation. I know a lot of the time I would wish I had a phone, not necessarily even a smartphone, just to be able to talk to someone or be able to call my mom and say I want to go home without having to go borrow a stranger's phone. But at the same time, I also saw a lot of my friends who are obsessed. And one of my family rules is when you go to bed, the phones and all the electronics have to stay downstairs.
Good rule.
But I had friends who would sleep over, and they would refuse to follow those rules. They're like, well, it's my phone. I have to talk to these people. And so I got to see how it became an addiction, and so that kind of scared me a little bit, and I realized how harmful that is.
Okay. What do you think, Melissa?
I got an iPhone probably two, three years ago, and I was just on it all the time, and it became, like you said, glued to my hip. It was basically, like, right there with me all the time. Whenever we were having family time, I would have my phone on, and I'd isolate myself and feel like I wasn't there anymore. I'd escape through getting on social media or texting my friend, oh, this is so boring, I wish I wasn't here. And it was basically like I wasn't even there anymore.
Hmm. I have one question I have to ask before the program ends. We all know kids who have the, quote, cool parents, okay? What do most kids say about this cool parent when the cool parent or the kids of the cool parent aren't around? In other words, are they really all that cool?
I feel like it's more that they don't care. And mm-hmm. so it has a bad message to the kid. And I'm sure that, honestly, they would wish that they had more strict parents that cared a little bit more and spent more time about them.
Mm-hmm. How about it, Holly?
I feel like when they're not around, a lot of times they do say, oh, yeah, I wish I was at their house or whatever. But it's a lot of times it's a negative, like, oh, well, their parents let them do X, Y, Z. So I wish I had their parents. But at the same time, I can see how they probably wish they had our parents or something.
Sure. No, I hear that a lot. And it goes back to that Romans 7 thing where Paul is saying the things I don't want to do, I do. The things I do, I don't want to do. It's that spirit-flesh conflict right there. So if it's massaging my flesh, you know, I want it. But I also want a deeper part of me says, you know, I want balance. I want someone to help me exercise some discipline or some self-discipline here.
Yeah. As parents, we would all deeply love to hear some teenager tell us we were cool. I mean, that would make our day. But in light of what you just said, if we hear our teens or our teens' friends saying, wow, you know, Mr. Roswell, you're so cool, I better back up and take a look at that because that's probably not what I want.
I want to do a gut check. Yep.
Well, Trace, we are out of time once again, but ladies, thank you so much for coming in, Holly and Melissa. They're aliases. We're trying to protect their privacy here, but we really appreciate your insights today. Thanks for being on Licensed to Parent.
It's been a blessing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you have been listening to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a one-year residential program for teens in crisis located just north of Atlanta. As you know, we do talk here quite a bit about the challenges of digital technology and the damage that it can bring to the family when not monitored and managed properly. And to that end, we've got some resources on our website that we think might help you better deal with these issues in your own family. Two of these resources are DVDs, and they specifically deal with electronic media and with music. The first is called Captivated: Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture. Part of that was actually filmed here at Shepherd's Hill Academy. The other is Hell's Bells 2, which was produced by a frequent guest on this program, Eric Holmberg. And Hell's Bells deals with the power and the spirit of popular music. We would certainly encourage you to consider each of these for your own education, and then when and if you deem it appropriate to go through these with your own children to help teach them to be discerning in the choices that they make when it comes to internet use and to the music and videos that they listen to and watch. Again, you'll find both on our website at licensedtoparent.org. And while there, you'll also find archives of our past programs and links to sign up for Trace's weekly parenting blog, Insight for Today's Culture. Our web address, once again, licensedtoparent.org. And along with Trace Embry, I'm Rich Roswell, thanking you for joining us and inviting you back again next time to once again renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.